The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, threw the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
And it is the Jefferson. And this morning, we are short a few souls in here. Terry Raposa has a nail in his tire. Wynn Carpenter is on his way. And I am Janet Chandler. I am here. We are going to have a call-in from Mark Baird. And we also have an in-studio guest, Tanessa Audette, who will be talking about the state of Reading's budget. That's about the way it is. We are KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio, and you can get it also on KCNR1460.com. Absolutely no excuse. All of the shows are archived, so you can hear it now or you can hear it later. If you wish to call in, probably later when Tanessa is talking, it is 605-4567. And we are... since I do not see Mark Baird's... Mark is on the line. Okay, let's go to Mark Baird.
I'm an open book.
Yes. And what do you have to say to us this morning?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Janet. Yeah, I wanted to call about Sam Peretti's passing.
A loss to all of us, yes. Please, tell us.
Very much so, yeah. I want to say something, a quote from Sam. He said, "If you can see life through my eyes, I see a bright, shining light. I see a lot of patriots who love this country, and with the strength and grace of God, we are going to take this country back, snatch it out of the grip of tyranny." And that was Sam. He was most importantly a Christian. He was definitely a patriot. He knew tyranny because he literally went to Sacramento every single day, or almost every day, and he stood in those committees and tried to argue for the rights of the people of the state of California in the face of such opposition that very oftentimes the legislators would call him names and kick him out of the assembly rooms. I mean, here he is. A spokesman for Gun Owners of America, Gun Owners of California, trying to have shed reason on some of these tyrannical bills that they're constantly passing, regardless of the Constitution. They don't care what it says. Most of them never even read it. It has no impact on them. They feel like in Sacramento, they can do whatever they want to you anytime they want to, regardless of what the Constitution says and means. And if you doubt that, look at the latest redistricting thing, where the legislature of the state of California redistricts the state without consulting the people, without going to the so-called Citizens Redistricting Committee, which admittedly Democrats control, and they won't even disclose who drew the new maps. And now in Congressional District 1, you could literally spend 12 hours in a car to get to from one end of the district to the other just to go to a political meeting. That's how much those people care about us, our rights, our lives, our money, our property, our families. And Sam knew all that, and he faced it every single day. He was a Christian, a patriot, a champion. And I am sorry about his passing. And he was the one, by the way, who was instrumental in getting Gun Owners of America to write an amicus brief, which was an extremely well-written paper by a couple of very, very good constitutional attorneys, and I am sure it's going to have a positive outcome on my case, and that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. It is a blessing that we had Sam for the time that we had him, because he was effective and a hard worker.
Well, all I can say is honor the Lord first and honor our freedom second, because they are trying to take both of those things from us in this state, and they'll succeed if we allow it.
In the days before we had the commission for redistricting, I lived in the Central Valley just outside of Modesto in a small town called Oakdale. And while there, we moved to Happy Camp. And I was shocked to learn that I belonged to the same district. It took in the little area around Oakdale, and then it went up I-5, followed I-5 to Wairika, turned left down Highway 96, and took in the town of Happy Camp. And that's how redistricting used to be done before they had the commission. Then we had some sanity with the new commission, and now we're going to go back to that insanity again with Marin and Modoc in the same district.
Well, even the commission has tried to redistrict our district before to include the coast so that it would be a Democratic district. We fought that twice in Siskiyou County and won to keep our district agricultural with common history, common culture, common economics, and in a way so that people, because literally for people in Siskiyou County to go to the coast to have a political meeting, we would have to leave the state of California to travel to the coast and then come back into the state of California to go to our own district. So these things are tyranny. Like I said, Sam fought this stuff all his life. We've been fighting this stuff most of our lives. And if ordinary people don't stand up and help us, we will lose. And we're in danger of doing that. So stand, folks. It's time. It is time.
And despite the fact that in the last election, 40% of the people voted Republican, of the 52 redistricts, 4 are Republican.
We have 17% of the representation in the state of California as conservatives, and we have about 40% of the vote. So that should tell you something. And when you look at the state of Jefferson, which is 21, 22, 23 counties, whatever, and arguably has around 6 state-level representatives, the northern third of California has 0.05% of all the representation in the state. Two-thirds of the state, which are primarily liberals, have 99.95% of the representation, and the northern third of California has 0.05% of the representation. That is going to get worse. It will get worse. The governor is hell-bent on doing this, and we know what his track record is. So
I have a solution. CaliforniaStateSplit.com. CaliforniaStateSplit.com.
Take the survey, everyone. Let's see what you think, because we need about $10, $11, $12 million. We can make this happen. I believe we could win this in a statewide initiative. We have enough support. We have enough people who have been disadvantaged through state politics. We can break this state up, but we need the money to get this initiative on the ballot and see it through. So if you want freedom, it is there for the taking. All we have to do is act.
If this redistricting does happen as Newsom wants it to, the state is gone. There's no getting it back.
You can't fix California now. It'll be even worse once this is through, and you know it's going to go through because they've already done the gut and amend bill. The governor's already demonstrated in every news media he can possibly get his polished head into that he's going to sign it. So it's a done deal, because the Democratic crime syndicate runs this state, and they're taking everything you have. And if you want to help them, do nothing.
So when we are already billions of dollars in debt, why don't we call a special election that's going to cost $200 million?
We are about $2 trillion in debt in this state. A lot of that's CalPERS, a lot of it isn't. But we can afford to spend $50 million fighting the President of the United States. We can afford $27 billion giving free stuff to the largest illegal alien population in the United States. we can afford all of these things, but we can't afford to have an independent review of the redistricting. Well, you know, hey, that's the way it goes.
CaliforniaStateSplit.com.
Hey, Mark,
Amen.
It's Terry. Thanks a lot,
Terry.
Buddy. We have a guest here. We're going to get that. Thanks again, Mark, and thanks for all the kind words about Sam. He was a wonderful man. Left Earth too soon, but even heaven will be improved with his presence. So, all right. Anyway,
God bless.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
So, Tanessa Audette, we have some things that we need to talk about. Apparently, there's some nefarious things going on here, and we need to learn a little bit about that.
No.
In government? Never.
Never.
What
there you
great,
go, my lady.
What a great segue from the governor issues to the city issues.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, let me just clear up some of the stuff that was said on your last show. I brought paperwork, you know, as usual. I don't think you should just trust anything that politicians say. They should back it up with some facts. And even if they're wrong, you should know they're wrong on paper as well as what they say.
So you have receipts.
I have receipts. Yes, I do. So one of the things, and I'll just give a caveat. You know, we have new council members. And so it is a lot of information. It is a lot of moving pieces. And so when they get things wrong, I have some grace for them, but I do want to correct things so that people are not misled. So when we got into our budget workshops, in our very first budget workshop, which was January 23rd, 2025, and you can find all of these on the public portal, the presentations are actually included now. If you look at the public portal, if you go back to the old ones before 2023, you don't get presentations, but the new ones do.
So where does somebody go to find that? Is there?
So if you go to the City of Reading website and you click on government, there is a public portal. You can click public portal. Then you click on the public portal, and you can go to search agenda.
Okay.
And then from search agenda, it'll give you 2023, 2024, and 2025. You can click on 2025. And from there, you would click on the budget workshop that was on January 23rd of 2025. And that, well, there's no staff report, but there was a presentation that day.
Okay.
And so the presentation slides will be there. Okay. And in that presentation slide, it's talking about the sales tax forecast. And it says that what they are telling us that they would like to do, what their recommendation is that they would have it be 2.5% from last year. That's how they want to go up. The other council member said 4% was what we were going to do, and then he championed the change to 2.5. Nobody ever said 4% for sales tax growth. That never happened. They presented to us as 2.5%. And then on May 6th, we got, this was the extent of the numbers that we were given for the revenue and expenditures.
Half a page of information.
This whole book summarized by these two numbers. And as you can see, there is no comparables. There is no, I mean, this is it. This is the entire staff report, which was just
half a page of information.
I thought ludicrous.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And so you have, it's simplified to, and no comparables. So you're not looking at the year before. You're not looking at performance. You're not looking at anything. And I was basically saying that this is absolutely insane. And what they expected for revenue was historically an increase that we've never seen. It's a number we haven't seen. It's an amount we hadn't seen. And so, Councilmember Reznor said, I think we should go down to 2%, not 2.5%. And that was the big change. So, that is all that happened on the sales tax forecast. So when the other council member, Danuka, is saying that it was 4% and then he championed it to be 2%, like that just didn't happen. And nobody was, I was.
Are you talking about our last week program?
Your last week's program. I just want to correct the record.
Right?
Yeah. So I listened to that and I was like, and I have some grace for him because he's new. But the fact is that just didn't happen. So we have the paperwork to tell you exact, and you can watch the videos to see what it is that they were saying. Nobody said a 4% increase for sales tax. It was 2.5%, and on May 6th, Aaron Reznor said 2% when I was saying, like, this just isn't enough information. this is actually ridiculous to think that we are going to okay the budget based on one page of simplified numbers with no comparables, with no, we never got any presentations right. from police, from anybody. So, the big compromise was going to 2%, which, again, absolutely ridiculous. So that's on that. If we didn't pass the budget, so let me correct the record. Trash doesn't not get picked up, like all of those ideas of if you said no to the budget, what would happen next? It would not be a shutdown of the government. We are not the federal government. We would not be able to, if there was nothing that happened by June 30th, then we would not be able to make payments to things. But that doesn't mean that the services stop. It just means we're not paying our bills at that point. However, this was happening. They approved it on like June, I believe it was June 15th or June 17th. We had plenty of time. If we had said to them, no, we've had this for a week, it's not enough time, we want another week, we could have come back and scheduled a special meeting for another week to be able to go over.
Why do you think that was not done? Because that's very logical.
Why didn't they do it?
Why didn't they do it? That's very logical.
Why didn't they ask any questions? Why did they not ask for more information? Why didn't they ask questions about issues in the budget? Why did they gavel me down? Why? I know. A million whys. I don't know why. I don't know why. We'll get into just that, the issues and why I wrote the paper that I did. But for the most part, if they would have done that, if I had gotten two more no's, they would have had to revise it. They would have had to make changes. They would have had to either spent that time during that meeting listening to all the questions, go back and revise and come and give us answers. We could have had a meeting every single day until we got that budget
done.
Okay,
just so we get this straight, because, Dr. DeNuca was very, he was saying that if in fact you did not vote and pass that budget, that we wouldn't even get the trash picked up. And you're saying that's not the case.
No.
Okay, so how much time would we have had? I mean, again, I'm trying to figure out how come no one ever wanted to go through the budget itself.
Correct.
Especially after the Board of Supervisors set that example and went through theirs. I'm surprised.
The entire process was very frustrating, and I was very frustrated. I didn't want to just throw out accusations. I just wanted more information, and I thought it was incredibly improper to give us, in the face of having these deficits, not actually give us more information to arm us to make better decisions about what we were doing moving forward. And there was just no ability to scrutinize the recommendations that they were making. And even if you look at the recommendations from the May reports, that's not actually what ends up being the numbers that are on the budget. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the fact that you only had 1 week. So they made some changes, but there just wasn't even enough time to go in line by line to understand what it is that you were changing. And there was no workshop with the actual budget. We had 1 week with the actual budget and no questions, no ability. It was not then another workshop to kind of go through this book now that they had it and to say why this, why that, why is the police budget the same amount, but you lost 17.56 position? How come personnel costs are the same? Like, explain that. Where's these ARPA grants? Where, I mean, there's just so many questions that I have, and none of that got answered, and it basically just got squashed. It's like, no, we're okay with this, and we're just going to go for it.
Now, aren't those questions being posed to the staff, and the staff's supposed to come back on September the 2nd? And what's that all about?
Okay, so, so this last meeting, I'm actually kind of confused as to what exactly the staff is going to look at. Are they going to look at what I've said is inaccurate about the budget? Are they going to look at the entirety of the findings? I tried to ask that question, and it was vague then, and it's vague now. I said, oh, we're going to open up the budget again to ask questions? And they're like, no, that's not what we said. So I still don't know exactly what they're going to come back with, because nobody has said to me, what questions do you want answered? Which one of the many questions you've asked do you want answered? Or if they're actually going to go look at the findings and they're going to give us a report on that. I'm entirely unsure as to what it is. What I had asked for was an ad hoc committee to investigate
right.
the things to see if what I have found is accurate, or if what I have found does need to be answered, or if there are procedural issues with how they're reporting things in here. And they said, no, they don't want to do that. Nothing independent to look at both sides of this thing. They want the finance department, whom we have issue with, to then come back and tell us, you know, that whatever they're going
to
tell us.
So let me get this straight. You're asking the department to come back to you, who apparently, even according to conversations with other council members, you don't really trust. You're asking them to come back to you with information about things you don't trust them about. Is that about right?
Well, I think, and this is fundamentally the issue that I have, is that if you largely just go off what you are told,
right,
then there really is no verification of facts.
Right.
And what I have found is that there is a major discrepancy in what we're told versus what the paperwork actually
right.
says. And if you are 10 years removed and you want to go back and look at something and what happened and all you're relying on is the paperwork, then you lose a lot of that context if they're basically saying, well, we didn't do it exactly right, but just trust us, it's in there. You know, just trust us, that number is correct. And you're like, but how? Where?
Yeah, where?
How can you possibly consider a two-year budget in a week?
Correct.
It doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't.
And who puts this budget together to begin with?
The people they don't trust.
Yeah. So, and don't want you to see it over
well,
a week.
Well, here's the thing. I'm happy to trust them, but you have to verify that. And it's my responsibility as a city council member to hold them accountable. So management, the budget is the responsibility of the city manager. And its execution and its development and sort of how it gets, you know, put on paper is the finance department. But make no mistake, it says it in the book, it says it in every budget book that this is the city manager's job. So the buck ends with him. And so if the finance department does something like right before the meeting, they changed maybe like they found, you know, whatever, maybe 6 or 8 pages of errors, no big deal. They just gave us new copies, like maybe something was not like a material error, just there is an error. So they gave it. It's okay. That totally happens. That's the process of developing something, is that there's going to be errors. But you provide that to everybody so then each department can go look at it. Each department can say, okay, but the department's got this a week before. The department's got this a week before. So it's not just the council that's getting this the week before. This final document comes in and the department's are getting it the week before. So
the final document is put together by whom?
The finance department.
Okay.
Your finance director.
Okay.
And the city manager.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and those are the two that are going to come back and give you a report on September.
Not September 2nd, just so you know.
Oh, I was told that yesterday.
A month. If you listen to what he says, they said, can you come back with this? And the city manager says, yes, in a month.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the deal with September 2nd?
Well, who controls
the
city manager?
City council.
Okay, well, because we've got some information that we have gotten as recently as yesterday that is not quite the same as this, trying to get some clarity. By the way, Dave, is our online still off?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yes, but the recording will be up later.
The recording will be up later, folks, and we are... we're not online right now, but you can hear us on the radio. And
AM,
if you can hear us on the radio, then you can call us at 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. Tanessa, so where do we actually go from here? I mean, that's been the whole thing. We've got all we have all this stuff. So where do we go from here?
So my intent when I did the findings was to put all of this into one place so that it could be evaluated, judged, scrutinized. You know, if I'm wrong, please tell me where, because this is the information that I'm now operating off of, because this is what I have found in the paperwork and I know what I was told and I've watched the videos. So it's like this has to be reconciled at some point.
Sure.
And my efforts to reconcile this with the city manager was not met with any responsibility to be taken. I asked him, what responsibility do you want to take in what has happened? And it was just silence. And that's face to face. So for me, the findings, the entire thing is kind of summed up into a couple different parts. There's the current budget of what's happening, which is just the numbers and, you know, this number doesn't add up to this number and why, tell us why. And this number doesn't add up to this number, tell us why you're doing that. And what financial practices are you utilizing in order to come up with these numbers? And if you're doing something that you've never done before, why is there no note
right.
to say that you're doing something different?
Exactly.
And how is somebody supposed to read this if you add these up to this total and now there's a different total? And so there's just a lot of questions that I have, and that's the budget section of this. Then you come over to this relationship that we have between management and the city council and what that relationship is and how you are getting information, which you're largely being told what that information is. And so in light of that,
you're watching it in real time, because I am coming with a piece of paper that says, hey, this is what this says. How do you reconcile that? And they're saying, trust me. No, it's wrong. You're wrong. That paper's wrong. We're right. And you're like, okay, well, then what page would you send me to? Like, well, show me where I missed it. Show me the page in the document where you add this extra money to this account, but you've never done that before, and where's the note? And so I'm substantively asking for corrections or an explanation, and I'm being met with, she's crazy, she doesn't have a finance degree, she doesn't know what she's talking about, why didn't she do this 2 years ago? And you're like, okay, all of that or none of that could be true, but still answer the question. And what I haven't gotten is substantive answers or any response at all to what is happening.
Okay, I want to interrupt here.
That's unacceptable.
Well, this is kind of important.
That's unacceptable.
I need to interrupt here. I got a text. Now, we're not going to take a break, Dave, because we don't even have stream. Last week, we didn't have AM.
We have to take a break.
No, because I don't want to cut her too short. So we're going to take a – do we have to take a break?
No.
Why do we have to take a break?
KCNR has a two-minute break paid. Otherwise, if you guys want to, I don't know, if you want to pay for it.
Okay, well, here's the, well, right now, we don't even have, I just got a text from Kevin Cry, and, you know, we don't have everything that we should have the last 2 weeks. I'm not saying that that's
a radio station. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'm just saying what we need to do is we'll go ahead and we'll take the break, but let's make it quick. Go ahead and take the break.
Most everyone knows that Orchard Nutrition Center has a big selection of vitamins and supplements, a fresh bakery and deli, organic groceries, and certified organic produce from Shasta County and surrounding areas. What I know is, my mom loves shopping at Orchard Nutrition Center. Her motto, you are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. She says that all the time. Personally, I believe her. As a kid, I like things that are sweet. So when she comes home with farm fresh local fruit, trust me, it's sweet. Mom loves all the local veggies. And Dad, he likes meat. Orchard carries locally grown, 100% grass-fed beef. So guess what? Dad's even eating healthy, and he doesn't even know it. If you haven't been to Orchard Nutrition, you owe it to yourself and the ones you love. Just remember what my mom says. You are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. It all starts at Orchard Nutrition Center in the Cypress Square Shopping Center. Open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week.
Big news, Renning. Grange Co-op is now open at 55 Lake Boulevard, and we've been busy stocking the shelves just for you. From farm and ranch supplies to garden, pet, and home goods, we've got what you need. Celebrate with us August 15th through the 24th and save big. Get 15% off GMB soils, 20% off Monrovia nursery stock, and 25% off Wrangler, Ariat, and Cinch shirts, jackets, and vests. We're proud to join the Renning community. Come celebrate with us. Visit GrangeCoop.com/Renning to learn more. Sale only valid at the Renning store.
Kick the season off right and join us Mondays through December 29th for our Monday Night Football in Overtime, where you can enjoy delicious stadium snacks and buckets of beer while you watch your favorite football team on the big screen. Check-ins start at 4 p.m. Don't forget to play your favorite slot machine to earn a t-shirt and a shot glass. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. Find your moments at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Okay, well, we need to kind of get right to the... Okay.
Do we have Bill on the line?
Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me.
We don't have to play music.
It's Sally's music, man.
We do
That's
have
more
to
important
play
than
Sally.
The break. It's Sally's music. Turn that baby up. Tread on me. Don't tread on Janessa. Don't tread on Janet. Don't tread on Winna. Don't tread on me.
Speaking of tread, how's your tire tread?
Yeah. Yeah. This morning didn't start out very well.
Ditto.
Yeah, we all had that kind of morning. Welcome back, everybody. Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E. If you have a question or a comment for Janessa, the phone number is 605-4567, 530-605-4567. Bill, are you still there? Bill, are you still there? I guess we don't have a Bill.
Yeah.
So Bill on the board, but
he hung up. But the streaming's on.
Oh, streaming's back.
Streaming's on now.
Streaming's on.
Okay.
Yay. Okay, everybody. Streaming's on. KCNR1460.com. Tanessa.
Yeah.
I'm throwing you a pass, girl. Here it is.
Bill, call back.
She caught it. Go.
Okay. So I'm gonna try to walk through this in a manner at which you can understand who's at fault, who's accountable, what we can do about it. So if you go and look at the findings, it'll probably take you, I would say, 2 hours to get through. And there's a lot of charts, so it's not, you know, it may seem like a lot of pages, but that's because I wanted to show you pictures of the evidence and which you can move through pretty quickly. So again, the budget, that's a current issue. And all evidence is in the budget book and in the Q3 report. Most of that information was found and edited by Denise Maxwell, who's our former finance director, CPA. So you can look through that. Then you have the issue of management, right? So we're operating off of what we're told, not necessarily what is true. And I'm looking for what's provable, what the facts are versus what was said. And so that sort of relationship has been dominating sort of how we get information. And if you hear from the other council members, likely what they're going to tell you is what they were told, which is why they don't have a piece of paper to back it up or a staff report or a budget, you know, some kind of something to back it up. It's because, again, they're just going off what they're told. So I got the red pill on my birthday, actually. It was on March 13th, so I'll never forget because it was actually on my birthday. And we come in for a budget meeting, and there's a couple things that were said. We had been told we had a $5 million deficit. Now we have an $8 million deficit. And we were told that we are bare bones. We've had no new staff since 2004 except police, fire, and utilities. And I wanted to save the cops, and so the three that they were trying to cut. So I went and met with the finance director for many hours, several sessions of minimally 4 hours apiece. And in that meeting at the end, when I was just like, you know, couldn't get answers from him, or he didn't know, or nobody's ever asked. I mean, he literally said, like, why don't you just trust me? And it's like, well, that's fine, but you have to show it to me because I don't understand and you're not giving me enough information. And he said, well, you're going to have to cut a lot more.
Okay, he being
our finance director, Greg Robinette.
There you go.
And so he is the first person to tell me, you spent $13 million of reserves, not four. Like, you guys are in trouble. And you should go watch this September meeting from 2024 when we did the Q4. And that was my red pill. There was no way to go back after that. And so I started to dig in because I thought, oh, we're not just going to lose this many cops. We'll probably lose a lot more. Like, this is a way bigger issue than what I understood. Okay, so that's when I started digging in. And that's where this part of the story moves to the past. And you don't have to take my word for it that it's a past issue, because Barry Tippin says, who is our city manager, says in a podcast, the City's Own podcast, at the end of June, after the budget is passed, they ask the question, it's in the first 4 minutes, they say, why was the budget so hard to pass this year? Why do we have these issues? And he says, well, if you want to know why the problems with the budget exist now, you have to go back to 2022 and the decisions that were made then. So I had explained this many different ways, but I think the most successful way for me to explain this, because really this is where outrage begins. This is where, like, we are calling for people's heads, and it's like I'm trying to figure out, well, what can we actually do about it? And so that's how I want to frame it. And this has obviously been a process for me too, because I'm figuring it out. I'm trying to report on it while I'm getting it vetted by different people to figure out if it's true or not. You know, so just understand, I've also been going through the process as this goes, so it's not perfect. You know, someone's like, you should be doing this, and I'm like, I don't have a marketing plan for this. I literally was discovering it, figuring it out, making sure it was not incorrect, making sure that I was asking the right questions. And so just understand, like, I'm also, this is evolving as well. And there are certain moments where you're just like, okay, well, now that I know for sure this is my responsibility, what can I do next to solve for that and hold people accountable?
And,
so,
and as we go to what we can do next, yep, which is great,
yep.
Bill, you might want to make it quick, buddy. No. Bill, are you there? Okay. All right. That's it. No more bills.
Maybe that's just the bill. They're just trying to get somebody to pay the bill. Okay?
Maybe
that's just
maybe that's why we're doing
it. Who is paying the bill? Yeah. And I think, and fair enough, people that don't want to read the whole thing are just like, come on, just cut to the chase. Like, what do you want us to do? Like, who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? Who's what? And of course, we're human, so it's like a hot mess. But the question of is it legal or not legal, this is what I want to answer for you. So, and I'll tell you the story in light of that. So, okay. So, okay. So, there are several, sorry guys, we're trying to get Bill on the line. So I'm going to tell you what happened, and I will tell you what pieces of this I think are legal, what are legal issues, and then what is really just a, does it violate the contract of management to where management can be held responsible for the decisions that were made. So when we go back to 2022, we're talking about two different aspects. We're talking about a sales tax modification, and we're talking about raises. And when you want to talk about the illegality of what happened, the illegality falls on the council because the raises that were given in January of 2022 and in September of 2023 were done improperly.
So the council meaning whom?
The city council. So it's a Brown Act violation of the city council.
Go ahead.
So if and this is if they determine that this is true, because this is the realm of what we're talking about. So when you look at like what happened and what could be done on illegalities or whatever, the Brown Act was violated on January 18th, 2022, and it was violated September 5th, 2023, in my opinion, when those raises were put forward and they were done in a manner that does not conform to the law. So there's a government code, which is also in the report. There's a government code that says that if executive management, specifically our city manager, our city attorney, if you change their compensation, it has to be agendized separately. That amount of that compensation has to clearly be in the agenda, not in the staff report, not, you know, hidden in attachments and that kind of stuff. It has to clearly be written that this is what you're going to pay this person now so that the public can then see it and give comment on it. They can call their council people and say, yes, no, you know, where do you live? I'm coming after you. You know, all the things, right? So all of that happened. That those things did not happen for those two massive raises. They were mixed in with executive management, and it was clearly not agendized what that compensation would actually be and the parameters of that. So why that is an issue for the council is because that violates the Brown Act because they passed something improperly.
If they were passed improperly, are they repealable?
Yes. So, let me add one more, and then I'll get to what we can do, the remedy. So the second violation of the Brown Act, in my opinion, the second violation of the Brown Act would be negotiating in closed session directly with the council. So by law, and there's a government code, you cannot, the city manager, the city attorney cannot directly negotiate with the council and negotiate their salary. And that happened on in August, August 15th exactly. And here's the thing, I can talk about what happened in that closed session because when we went to vote on it, DeQuisto voted against it, which I had a problem with because, well, first of all, why didn't you raise an objection before? I could have looked into it. But in closed session, the negotiation was, I will do this if it's a 5-0. Like, if you all agree to it, then we'll do this. So if he then changes his mind and he agreed to that. So then when you come out into open session, if he's going to vote against it, I'm like, well, that wasn't the deal. Like you said in closed session, yes, and now you're saying no, and like, tell me why. Like, just tell me why. And so we opened that closed session. So I can talk about the fact that he negotiated his own raise. He came to us on August 15th with here are the terms of what I want. Here's how I want this next 2 years to go, and this is what I want to be paid and all that kind of stuff. So he negotiated with us in closed session directly. That is a violation of the Brown Act, a violation of the council that they did that. So what's the remedy? The remedy is that those raises are null and void, and the council can come and null and void those raises. However, there's a statute of limitations legally that says that that statute of limitations says you only have like 90 days to cure that. And then the council could have gone back out and they could have, you know, this is by law. So the violation of the law happened, you know, in such a way you wouldn't need us to vote on it. This is just somebody could could file to, you have to cure that you did it wrong. So there's really, here's what we could do. We could go to in an open session during the minutes and say, we are recognizing this was done improperly. We are null and voiding that, those actions. And even though we can't claw back money, it does mean we're going to have to remedy this for the future. Do we then reinstate those raises? Do we say, nope, we're going to have to reevaluate what that, you know, what those raises are ongoing for all the rest of the people that had lumped their raises in with the city manager, which is all the executive management? There's a bunch of repercussions that would happen, but to me, that is holding responsible and accountable what was done improperly. I think we should be doing that. Because at a minimum it says, hey, if you do this wrong, there's going to be consequences. We're not just going to go, oh, well, enough time's passed by, so, oh, well, who cares? Like, we're just not going to do it, you know? So to me, if you want to hold accountable where you can hold accountable, this is a possibility of what you could possibly do.
Does the Brown Act have any teeth at all?
It would have null and voided them immediately had it been 90 days. But now, well, however, there's implications for that. So if you go on the record and say that these are null and void, you're going to have to now take a second action. You're going to have to either reinstate all those raises. So you're going to now give the executive management, the city manager, there's stuff that happens after the fact, which could fix some of those things, could right size those raises, could do all of that. That's, you know, again, it would have to go to our city attorney. They'd have to give us advice. They'd have to tell us. But to me, because it was done improperly, illegally, even though the statute of limitations just passed where you can have a legal remedy, I think you at minimally need to have a symbolic remedy to say, we're not going to do this again. And we have it on the record that we did it wrong and we want to do it again. If we do it again, we're going to do it right. Now, how does that affect current management? Well, they have a contract. And in that contract, it says that they can't be deceptive. This is termination for cause. You can't be deceptive. You can't have malfeasance. You can't have nonfeasance. You can't have misfeasance. Those things are outlined as terminations for cause. And so I would say that here's the crux of this. There were two compensation agenda items before this that our city manager prepared and approved, where he did it exactly correctly. And he agendized it separately. He put the amount or what that compensation change would be and cited the code and explained in the staff reports the codes and included the contract amendments. All of that was done in the correct way when it comes to the agenda part of that. And so that is a willful disregard for the law to then do it wrong twice later when we're talking about much larger compensations where the public for sure would want to weigh in on that, which is who we as the council works for. And we have robbed the community and the voters and our bosses of the opportunity to weigh in on that. And so there was a clear pattern that, that he knew exactly how to do it and he did it wrong. In fact, there was three separate occasions. On the other three separate occasions, he also did not negotiate privately in closed session. So he had three times where he did it properly, and then that last time, he did not.
Well, he is Barry Tippin, right?
Yes, our city manager.
Okay, so Barry Tippin is gone, or going to be gone, and that means we have to get a new city manager. Why do we have an assistant city manager?
Well,
there were years ago when we didn't. I'm just wondering.
Yeah. So there's basically just many different aspects to, you know, what the city has their hands in and the things that they're doing. So it really just creates a level of bureaucracy to be more hands-on with those things, where the city manager has basically, you know, said these are your concentrations. It's just like having a director for some of these larger things that fall on the city manager's responsibilities.
It's $350,000.
I'm not arguing about it.
No, I know you're not.
Yeah.
I want to bring it up because you also can have staff to do a lot of that work. Why couldn't you just have staff do that work? Is there something that he has to be privy to, meaning the assistant city manager, that the staff can't be? Seems like the staff is privy to everything.
Go ahead. I think in any time that you are preparing for who would possibly be next to take over, you want people to sort of have access to what that next position is, and I think it makes sense that your assistant city manager or your whatever the terminology is would be the next in line. So you're really, if they're not there, that's somebody that could do that, you know, step into that. They come into closed sessions. They're listening. They're sort of privy to all the things that are happening. So if at any point that person's gone, they can come in or, you know, you're preparing somebody for that next job. I think that's reasonable if you can afford it.
But, was Barry Tippin the former assistant city manager?
I think he was for a time. I think he had many different roles.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just, you just climb up the ladder. And who's to say that this assistant city manager, if he moves up the ladder, isn't going to want the $458,000 package that Tippin has and move up from his $328,000 package?
And what about the retroactive of going back to where the city manager's salary was? And since this was done in violation, because his retirement's going to be based on that, of what he goes out on. So we need to correct that to go back to where it was, so then the retirement can be based on that if that was done properly.
Right, and all of that would be possible. So there's actions that the council can take, and this is one of those actions that we can take. We can say we are at fault for not knowing the rules or not, or I don't know if they knew them or didn't know them, but basically it was not done properly, and we adopted something that was done improperly, and now we are going to undo that. Now, you can't claw back that money. It's been too long. And even though the contracts were not attached and there was no contract amendments that were signed, again, there's a case for something. It's as if they have the will to actually push forward on that case.
But who's they?
The council. And so the moral of that story is that there is something to be done about that. Mm-hmm. It's if they want to do something about that. Well, so there's that.
And the simple thing would be just to honor his retirement and retire at the former salary.
Right.
That's it. I mean, that's plenty of money. Good grief. In Redding, are you kidding?
Agreed.
He's going to move to Idaho like everybody else does anyway. So they're going to have plenty of money.
Next door to Starman.
Okay, so then I want to pivot to the contractual obligations of our management and what they should have been doing and the issues of malfeasance and nonfeasance. And so the malfeasance part, malfeasance just means an intentional wrongdoing in the performance of official duties. So knowing exactly how they're supposed to agendize a raise and not mix two together, he demonstrated that he knew that. Mm-hmm. And then he violated that. And so that's one aspect of that. And then this is the issue on the sales tax and then the subsequent raises. So you have, and I think that that's a case for nonfeasance, which is a failure to perform a duty where inaction leads to foreseeable harm. And so on that measure, it's, to me, in my opinion, in 2021, in May, you know, when the Record Searchlight did articles, which was great. I really appreciate it. And if you don't think that they reported properly, it's actually a video, so you can watch it yourself, what the city manager says. But basically, when they're developing the new budget, they say, hey, we are going to get one-time funds. We're going to get this big surge of $4 million. This is what, you know, this is what the data tells us. However, and it's in the article, they're talking about the one-time funds. They're talking about it's going to be $4 million. They're saying it's not the same as having money in the bank, but it's one-time cash. And you can watch the interview, and they're talking about, well, what are you going to do with this unexpected $4 million of one-time funding? And they literally outline what they're going to spend it on. They're going to do an airline revenue guarantee. They're going to buy trucks and fire engines. They're going to fix the aquatic center. And they're going to buy some new weapons and vehicles for the police department. And so they know they're going to get money. So what that actually looks like is they have a forecast. The forecast is $28 million for sales tax that year. However, they know that they're going to actually make $32 million that year. So what do you do in the new budget you're creating? Do you change projections to match that $4 million, or do you keep the projections the same and anticipate $4 million more? So just that's what they're discussing, and what they decided with the council is that they are going to bake into the budget the spending, specifically 5.8, not 4, but $5.8 million of deficit spending.
Oh, geez.
They're going to bake that in, and it's not going to show up in revenue, right, until you get to the Q4, where that $4 million then is going to be reconciled in, because they're not changing the projections on that 10-year plan. You don't see a revenue bump of $4 million. And that's fine. That's great. But you know that. But then that practically has to look like something that maybe councils are not super, there isn't like a red flag that goes off. So what happens is that's how they start the new budget. And so they start progressing and they get that first Q1 and they are 21.6% above expectations. Now remember, they're going to be because they are telling you you're going to make 28, but we know you're going to make 32, and that's perfectly fine. So they, that happens. Then the next Q2 comes out and it's 11.3% above. So it's actually coming down. So we're going to probably end flat because we know this. Okay. So also at this time, ARPA money comes in, that first check. So they find out in March they're going to get that ARPA pass, the COVID money passes. They're going to get that the next, they get their first installment of $9 million. They're going to get over $18 million in cash. So as soon as that check hits the bank in May, they immediately call for the salary, looking at the scales, you know, what are we getting paid and how are we getting it paid? They start looking at that. And so what I have here and what I can show is the fact that the next, you know, meeting, they decide we are going to modify the budget. This is not going to be one time. This is going to be for the rest of our lives that we are going to be making this more money. And so they modify the sales tax projection for that year, which was a 12.7% increase. But then they do this the next year at 13.6%. Wow. And so what that looks like is that from then on, every single report for 12 consecutive quarters is below projections. And when you look at when they modify, it is not, they knew, like in that, they, the, when it came back the very first quarter after they made that modification, they say, we're 10.3% above the old number, but we would be negative 1.7% below the new number. And at that, that's the exact same time that executives get these huge raises. The 40% to the bottom goes up. The 20% on the top of your pay goes up. All of those things are happening. You get to Q4 of that first year and it's flat. It's exactly the $32 million they thought it was going to be. However, it's trending down. The June numbers were down 21% just for the month of June in sales tax. So for all intents and purposes, they were right the first time. They should have gone back to the projections that they had, because if they had done that, they would have been exactly perfect. But they didn't do that. They actually probably would have been ahead. But they didn't do that. They kept a 13.6% increase, which meant they were going to make $33.2 million, and they didn't. They ended up at 30, so we lost. Well, there was less money to be spending, but they didn't know that. And so what you have, so they don't change it in that following year. As a matter of fact, they give more raises. They give massive raises. We're talking the 20%, the 43, up to 43%, just in that first amount to the RIEO, all of our general fund people. They give massive raises while they know it's declining. And so we end that second year at 8.9% below. So you would think if it was a 13.6% increase and you're down 8.9%, they would minimally go down go down at least what they're down to flatten it out. They don't. They only modify it by 5.63%. Now, nobody knows that they went up 13.6. That number is nowhere. Because when they passed it, and you can look in the February and in the March reports for 2022, when they pass it, they don't tell them a percent. If anybody heard 13% increase, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But that number is never entered into the lexicon. It is never discussed at all. So when I am on the council now and they're saying we're going to cut it by 5.63, that is massive. I've only ever seen one increase of 5%. I have never seen a decrease by 5.6. And so that feels like we're doing the right thing, because I had never seen those numbers typed before. So I thought, okay, we made a big deal here. Well, then the next, they don't even give us a Q1 for the following. Then you have negative, the next one is negative 4.5, then negative 4, more raises still being given at the same time. So as we're declining, and they know it's because of the modification, not because sales tax is down, not because the police cost more money. They know that it's because of modification, but nobody knows that. It's never discussed, never mentioned, never once do they say, well, you know, we modified it by 13%, so we should probably get it back to normal, go back to those original budget numbers, which were spot on. They don't do that. And so more raises are given, big raises, 20% raises, the 18% raises, more are given. Then we get to September of 2024 and they try to flatten it out, but it's still below. They only modify it by 4%. So you still haven't even gotten up to where the modifications are. And that's where you have, as a total, 12 quarters at negative negative projections, and you have 10 raises given during that time. And to me, that is bad advice.
You think?
That is, you know exactly what went wrong. You have gambled hoping that sales tax will rebound, even though property taxes are going up. So the revenue is only off by like a short amount. But the problem is you've given so many raises and personnel costs have gone up so much that it's out of your control. And now you're just hoping that somebody will pass a sales tax, which is why in 24, Barry was going to